Hi, everyone. It's Judy. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. Today, we talk with Jeremy Blum, who is the Director of Engineering at Shaper. Jeremy talks about what he's going to do at his keynote speech at Altium Live October 21 through 23rd in Frankfurt, Germany. His talk is in a holistic approach to engineering and design. You're going to learn a lot about how he's learned on his engineering journey from master's student at Cornell to launching a consumer-based product. You're going to learn a lot from Jeremy, so lean in, enjoy. I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Well, hi, Jeremy. Thanks so much for joining us again. We're delighted to have you back on the On Track podcast.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Well, for those of our listeners that may have not aren't acquainted with you from the first time, why don't you give us a quick professional background and how you found your way into an engineering career, and then tell us a little bit about Shaper Tools.
Sure. So I'm the director of engineering at a company called Shaper, based in San Francisco. We make handheld robotic power tools powered by computer vision. And I've been here for about 4 years now, overseeing the embedded software team and the electrical engineering here. I'm the only electrical engineer here and have been for the last 4 years or so, in addition to all the other things that goes along with a small startup company and everything that has to happen to bring a product to market. So I've been doing that for the last 4 years. Before that, I was at Google X for a few years, where I worked on system architecture and electrical engineering and board design and stuff for Google Glass mostly. And before that, I did a bunch of different things all over the place, but I did my undergrad and my master's in electrical engineering at Cornell. And in part while I was there, I did I worked at MakerBot, the 3D printing company, for a couple years, first as an intern, and then I consulted there and did some design work there. That was my first time really getting my feet wet with consumer electronics product design. And interspersed with that, a bunch of other things. I have a YouTube channel, which I'm not admittedly as active on anymore, but it's still very popular, and a lot of people watch the tutorial videos in there that are about electrical engineering and embedded systems and programming them. And while I was doing my master's, I wrote a textbook, Exploring Arduino. That's been on sale for the last several years now. The second edition is coming out very soon. I just finished writing it, actually. So I'm excited about that. But that's kind of the high level.
Great. I know. We can talk if... for our listeners, if you go visit jeremyblum.com and just look at his portfolio, it's wild. He's made a lot of super cool things, so I recommend you go check it out. I went recently, Jeremy, and I just kind of geeked out over the whole thing. It was really fun to kind of look through all the stuff you've done. And I think what's really neat is on your YouTube channel and even on your portfolio, on your website, is to watch you evolve from really being a kid, you know, just like a little maker kid.
It's weird. I sometimes go back and
don't ever take it down. I know. I personally love it. It's like geeky kid, like doing the things that a natural engineer would do. And you know, whatever, I'm a mom, but I think it's really cool to watch that evolution of you, you know, kind of in real time on YouTube and with the products you did.
It is weird how well documented it is, yeah.
But I don't know. That's just my recommendation. Don't ever take that down, because I think kids who stumble across it still can relate to it and then see where you've gotten. So I think it's awesome.
I don't know. The first YouTube video that I put up in 2006, I mean... you can visibly see me installing a floppy drive in that computer. And so I don't know how well some of the people today would relate to that, but it is pretty interesting to watch the progression and see how I've changed and evolved over the last decade or so.
I know. It's cool because you've been a YouTube kid, right? Like, that's a rare look. And someday, I'm telling you, you're going to look back and people are going to look back and go, oh my God, they were using that still then. You know, it becomes this almost like a little mini history book of electronics, you know? So, well, what I thought we'd talk about today is the keynote talk that you're going to give at Altium Live in Frankfurt. And we're delighted that you're joining us again and taking a trip out to Frankfurt. But, you know, even if folks aren't making it to Altium Live, I think you have a really neat, unique seat in the house from an engineering standpoint. And so the title is Holistic Product Design for Electrical Engineers. And so tell us about that and what inspired you to cover that topic.
Yeah, so my goal is to kind of expand and go beyond the keynote that I gave last year at Altium Live in San Diego, which is about empathetic engineering and understanding the people that you work with and how their constraints are different than yours and finding that right middle ground and how understanding what the mechanical engineers need and software engineers need and all that stuff makes it easier as an electrical engineer to approach a problem and not have to go through as many iterative prototypes because you've kind of been involved in that design process from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So the goal in this talk is to kind of expand on that in a way and go beyond just saying, here's what the design thinking approach is, and that's what my talk was about last year, largely design thinking, and now to look at what the actual requirements are of the people who are presumably working around you. And this is predominantly from a consumer products standpoint, but can be applied to a lot of things, and to understand what their needs and requirements are and how you can kind of learn those in a meaningful way to make it easier for you to meet their needs while also meeting your electrical requirements and your certification requirements and things like that. I'm also going to be talking a little bit about when I go to conferences or when I read technical papers and things like that about topics in board design in particular, things are often talked about in a very abstracted, idealized fashion. The reality is I've never had the luxury of designing a rectangular PCB in a perfectly shielded metal box. I would love to do that. It sounds great. It's not the reality of most product design engineering, especially for consumer products. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's admittedly, it's hard to give advice that covers everyone. And so we fall back to these kind of generalizations that are kind of going to do the best job of laying the groundwork for here's the general things that you want to do and understand how the system works and the layer stack and all these things. And here's kind of the general approach. But many of those things you have to make trade-offs as you encounter other requirements that might not necessarily be electrical in nature, might be driven by the industrial design of the product or the mechanical constraints, or we often have to deal with as electrical engineers and PCB designers that are out of our control. And that makes you make compromises, sometimes in places where you're told, like, you cannot compromise on this thing. But the reality is like, I don't have a choice.
Right.
So you have to pick and choose the right places to make the right compromises and how to, on top of making compromises, making design decisions early that are going to make it easier to find those compromises for people who work around you who are not necessarily working on the electronics of a holistically designed product.
Yeah.
So the kind of, I guess, wisdom that I want to impart in the talk is some of the things that I've encountered where I have to do something different than I would want to in an ideal circumstance, and how that worked out, and ways that it did, and ways that it didn't, and kind of just creating an understanding of what are the walls that you're going to run up against before you necessarily run up against them, specifically in consumer product design, and just like be aware, these are the things that you're going to see where you're going to encounter them, and you're going to be like, well, when I took a course or I was in university, I was told like, oh, you always have to like wrap these signals this way, or this has to be this shape, or this has to be grounded this way. And like, it's not always possible to do that in the real world. And so how do you approach things like that? That's the gist of it.
You're going to love, so I think you met Carl Shecky at our last year's conference. We were talking, I think, at PCB West together.
Yeah.
Carl's talk, you know, he's 44 years into this now, right? And his talk is making and breaking the rules, right?
Yeah.
When you can't deviate, when you need to, how to do that and not screw yourself up. So I see a little bit of overlap. And again, he's designing for really tight spaces and electrical vehicles and where heat's an issue, just all kinds of issues. And I remember he was on the podcast recently, and he said, yeah, the board supplier would come back and say, hey, you know, if you just put this connector on the back of the board, and he's like, yeah, dude, except there's a display that goes there. I can't do it, right?
Yeah.
So it's always those constraints and trade-offs. So I think that actually your talk and his will be looking at two sides of the same subject. So would you say then what inspired you is really having this, you know, boots on the ground experience of, you know, being in a startup company, creating a consumer device and walking through all the fire?
Yeah. So one thing that I've observed in various conferences and things that I've been to, and I met a lot of really smart, awesome people, I think the majority of the people who speak at them and attend them are largely from larger engineering companies with more people working on PCB design. Maybe, like, I know Carl's going to be talking about the person doing the schematic design is not the same as the person doing the PCB design often. And they're working inside of larger organizations, and there's different challenges associated with that. And so I think I bring a somewhat unique perspective in that, in, you know, at Shaper, which is, you know, like 24 people, and I have kind of been responsible for everything that vaguely touches anything electronic, from like conception and original architecture, the schematic, PCB design, design fabrication, fabrication itself, the assembly process, the testing, the in-circuit test, functional test, full assembly test, RMAs, repairs, like the full life cycle of the product. Most people who are doing electrical design will not necessarily touch that full life cycle. And I'm not saying you have to necessarily, but I hope that because I've had some experience doing that, I can convey some information from seeing that process all the way through, where, you know, I saw something at step XYZ that could have informed me to make a better decision at step ABC. And
right,
someone might not have normally ever seen that later step, because they're working in a siloed area, or they're working on, frankly, probably more sophisticated boards than I'm working on, but they're working on those boards 100% of the time. That's 100% of their job function.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I wish that was 100% of my job function, but the reality is it's not, and it's like 10% of my job function. I spend the rest of the time doing everything else related to it. So,
well,
I hope I can bring a little insight there.
I think that, Jeremy, you're a little bit the vision of today's engineer. You know, Carl's, for instance, been doing it for 45 years, and he's very skilled and, you know, knows more about PCB design than a lot of folks. But again, you know, these gurus that have gained all this tribal knowledge over time, just like you find yourself learning tribal knowledge, right? And trying to pass that on. You know, we're, what, at 25 billion IoT devices, and we're going to go up to 75 or whatever they're projecting. I think there's going to be a lot of people like you. I think that are wearing multiple hats, and I'm sure you weren't fully equipped, even giving a master's degree when you got out of college, to know how to design for everything, to see all the pitfalls that were coming. You know, you so I think that you actually have a lot to offer, because I think there's more and more people like you, because just the ecosystem's so different. Arduino, you know, the access to cheap, you know, there's just so much more available than there was, you know, 20,
yeah,
30, 40 years
and
ago.
It's a double-edged sword on the design side too, because it's a lot of this stuff is far more accessible now, which is great. It's way easier to get started learning these things and kind of get your toes wet and to start designing electronics or doing embedded systems and things like that. The double-edged sword there is that it's also easier to manufacture and cheaper to manufacture, and you end up with a lot of people who don't know what they're doing bringing things to market. And on one side, that's really exciting. It's great that these people are excited and want to do this. On the other side, hopefully they can learn how to do it correctly so they're building products that are performant and reliable. And I don't want to end up with an internet of crap. I want to end up with an internet of useful things. and I think we risk getting to the point where, okay, there's 50 billion IoT devices. How many of those are actually useful or working well or making our lives better? Versus how many of those are introducing unnecessary security vulnerabilities and all these kinds of things that are, that's more on the software side, but yeah, same thing applies to the hardware design of those products. And, I want more people in these fields. I want more STEM in schools, and I want more people getting into this, but I hope that they'll get into it and take it seriously and understand there's repercussions of building products that real people use. You have to do right, and you need to build high quality products.
Well, I think you just coined a new acronym, IOC, the Internet of Crap.
There's some websites that I would encourage you to Google. I can't remember the exact URL, but there's several people out on the web who chronicle just stupid things that are connected to the internet. And I'm guilty of connecting stupid crap to the internet, but I like do it for fun. I'm not trying to productize these things.
Right.
But there's a lot of stupid crap that is connected to the internet available as a commercial product.
Oh my gosh. If you find that URL, we totally need to put it in the show notes for our entertainment purposes. Not to mention, I want to go down that rabbit hole. What would you say I've gotten just sort of a little side seat in watching you develop over the last couple of years with Shaper, and knowing that you're overseeing like massive manufacturing lines and testing systems and then moving a whole line from North America over to Asia. Like, what were some of the like big, oh man, shoot moments that you kind of remember, like deer in the headlight moments you had? Is there a couple specific that you can remember that you went, oh man, I wish I would have known that?
This one will be obvious to a lot of people, but it's still, I certainly still struggle with it because it's a little different with every conceivable supplier and vendor and manufacturer. And it's just straight up human to human communication. It is consistently the thing that is probably one of the most difficult parts of my job. And I've worked with suppliers and manufacturers and vendors who are good and easy to work with, and I've worked with some that are not quite that easy to work with. And finding the right tactic and right approach for each of those is kind of different. And it's also a function of, the size of your company and kind of how much you can throw your own weight around a little bit. And it's important to be assertive when a vendor or manufacturer is not doing the right thing, but at the same time, you don't want to piss them off. One of the hardest things for me in going through this process has been trying to find that right balance. And so the thing that I have found works the best is making it really clear when I'm disappointed. So, I have encountered tangentially people who take that approach and just kind of get angry. And you can maybe do that if you're working for a multi-billion-dollar company and that supplier is dependent upon you as like their main or largest purchaser. But most people don't have that luxury. And so the piece of learning for me has definitely been to figure out strategically when I need to like express disappointment, because people don't like disappointing you. Mm-hmm. People dig in when you get angry at them, but if you say like I'm disappointed, like I thought, we had agreed on how to do this thing this way, but instead you're doing it this way. And a big part of that also, and I'll talk about this a little bit in my talk as well, is just really, really good documentation. And so I'm confident that if you went to any supplier or vendor that I've ever interacted with, and you say like, hey, has that Jeremy guy at Shaper in terms of like giving you documentation, I'm confident that they'll all tell you like, oh my God, his documentation is so over the top and good. And I'm very proud of that. I take my documentation very seriously. And especially when you're working with Asian vendors, not because they're in Asia, but just because there's a language difference and there's a communication latency and things like that, there's far more room for misinterpretation. Mm-hmm. And that means you just need to be way more pedantic in how you describe everything. And that takes time, and sometimes a frustrating amount of time, and it admittedly frustrates me sometimes. But I have found that if I document things really well, include really good diagrams, really good pictures, whenever I export like a design package for a PCB, it's fully rendered in 3D. You know, that's thankfully possible with Altium. But you know, the full 3D that you can manipulate in space in the 3D PDF, and if possible, I'll walk them through it on the phone, and mm-hmm. a very detailed BOM and a detailed assembly and fabrication drawing. And I have found that to be incredibly helpful. Another thing that I have observed, which is kind of the easier route, is oftentimes if you'll go to a fabricator, you'll say, here's my drawing, they'll give you back some engineering questions or DFM, and they'll be like, hey, we want to change this trace or do this thing slightly differently or increase this stack up thickness or whatever for the capabilities or materials that they have available to them. And you can just say, yes, do that. You know, modify the Gerber, make the changes. And that is the easy path that takes 5 minutes. And I almost never do that. I'll make the change if their suggestion is reasonable and I can accommodate it, but I'll always make it in my original design files and then resend them those design files with the change designed in, because I know inevitably a year from now, either me or someone who works with me is going to need to remake that board or bring it to another fabricator, another vendor or something. And the fact that that change happened is lost in an email that, you know, transpired a year earlier, and either I did it and I just forgot about it, 'cause I'm, you know, answering like 100 emails a day, who's going to remember that? Or there's someone else who's taken over that product or sustaining engineering of that and has no idea this is happening, and they use the exact same design files and they send them out, and suddenly things come back and they don't work right or they're different in some way. And so I always bring that feedback back into my design files, and as far as I'm aware, I don't think everyone is that pedantic or that anal in how they manage these designs, and I have found it doing that has, I can tell you like the number of times that it has prevented a problem later. Like I've changed something later and I've looked back and like, I remember they want to do this thing differently, and if I hadn't done it then I would be giving them the wrong files right now and all this would be messed up. So there have been several instances where we've gone through engineering question review and DFM like that, and just being pedantic about documentation has saved my butt on more than one occasion.
I wrote a blog a long time ago on the Microwave Journal website, and it was sort of about this, and the title was Slow Down to Hurry Up, right? That mm-hmm. it kind of is a pain to do all that, but the thing is, it will help you hurry up. And I think the temptation, and why a lot of people don't do that, see if you agree with me, so we're in all such a dang hurry, right? We're on deadlines. We got to get stuff out, and we're rushing, and because we have to. There's hard stops and whatever.
Yeah.
And my encouragement was like, take another few hours or a day and push back if you have to. And you will thank, my daughter always says this, my future self will thank me, right? Your future self will thank you, right? Because yeah. it will actually enable more speed on the back end, or less headache or cost or whatever, just to take that extra little bit of time. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
So you and I just ran into each other at PCB West up in Santa Clara this week. It was great to see you. So, do you typically attend that show, Jeremy?
That was my first time at PCB West.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed all the classes.
Okay. Well, the last question I wanted to ask you was about self-education, right? What you're talking about, it's there's kind of these perfect storm conditions. It's the best and the worst of times, you know, so to speak. And there's so much available and ways to develop, you know. One person said, yeah, you know, basically you can do a startup in your dorm room at college these days because of the availability of things. But there's all these detachments, right, between the fab, the assembler, the embedded, the software coder, like there's all this detachment. So it's kind of the perfect storm. And so we always have to be learning, right? We always mm-hmm. have to be learning because things are always changing. So what do you personally do to kind of stay ahead of the curve?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'll preface it by saying the burden of knowledge is real. And as you learn more and you realize more and more things that you shouldn't be doing, or we were talking about this last week, or things that you should be doing differently, you look back at all the things you've previously done and you're like, oh my God, I cannot believe I did that way, or I should have done it this way, or you're working on a new design and it can be the simplest, stupidest design ever. Like the whole thing is at super low frequency, it's DC, basically like, you know, it would work on a breadboard, nothing you can do is gonna mess this thing up.
Right.
And yet, in your head, you're like, oh, I learned all these. I was just thinking that this week from PCB West, I was learning all these new things about, you know, the right way to lay out your ground planes and stack ups and all that stuff, and things that I had a work knowledge of previously, but you just go deeper into the physics of it. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like overthinking these problems. And I'm like, yeah, I'm working on like a very simple board. I'm like, I gotta make sure that my grounds are the right spacing and my dielectric constant is good. And then I'm like, wait, what am I doing? Like, it's impossible for you to mess with this board. It's so stupidly simple. And so I just wanted to preface it by saying, take the knowledge you get and like put it in context and make sure that you don't overthink think things either. And I'm somewhat saying that for myself to remind myself.
Yeah.
My approach to education is, yeah, I think it is really important. The industry is changing quickly. I really enjoyed PCB West and the classes I went to there. Rick Hartley, who's also keynoting at Frankfurt, I attended a bunch of his classes and found them really educational. So I intend to continue doing things like that. I went to Altium Live last year, attended a lot of the classes there in addition to giving my talk. I read the industry magazines, I read the industry websites, I take it all with a grain of salt. Because another thing I've observed is, for all the various classes and conferences I've gone to, there's consensus on some things and then still disagreement on many things. Like this person said, you gotta do this way, mm-hmm. but I have data showing it works better this way. And that is rampant. And I have, even in the last few years, I've observed a lot of things seemingly consolidating as we get better and better at understanding the physics of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we have more sophisticated tools for experimentally finding how these things actually behave, and people do better and better experiments and kind of come to a consensus on these things. So I have actually observed that getting better, I think, in real time. But there's still disagreement about the best way to do certain things. And to bring it back to my talk again, what someone says is like, this is the right way to do this, does not necessarily apply to the way your product is built. Right. And you can't always draw the one-to-one comparison. They're like, you always have to have a ground plane underneath this thing. Well, in certain circumstances, maybe you don't, and maybe there's a good reason not to. So it's not just about learning rules of thumb. I think that there is a desire, especially among more junior engineers, to say like, I just want my list of like rules of thumb of like things I need to do and look out for. And while it would be great if that was a thing that existed, and there are quote unquote rules of thumb, they all have caveats.
Right. Every single one, and it's all situational. Because, by the way, hello, they're custom products.
Yeah.
And they're all operating at different frequencies and different, you know, it's physics. It really is complex, right? And
yeah, it is. And so you have to understand what underlies these things. And so you get that from these classes. So I go to those classes. Excuse me. And then a lot of it is when I'm working on my own designs or systems, I take the time not just to validate that they work in the environment or the circumstance that I'm specifically concerned about, but I'll take the extra day and I really analyze the system. I see how it's performing. I change variables, I change values on components, I change environmental operating conditions. I see how it impacts the design of the circuit and system, and I'm able to better draw conclusions for my specific use cases of, okay, if I change this variable, this thing gets better or worse in this way. And it's not quite a rule of thumb, but it's a fact that I know and makes sense in a particular problem space that I'm working in. So I find that to be really useful. And that it goes back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, hurrying up and slowing down. It takes a little bit additional time to really characterize and understand a system that you're working on. But as an engineer, you're likely to kind of be, and this is aimed more at people coming fresh out of university, you're likely to hopefully get into a situation where you start at relatively low speed stuff and you kind of work your way up to more and more sophisticated systems, more layers and many boards and flexes and all these things. And it gets, you get better and better at more complicated things. And if you build up a basis of knowledge working on the simple things, understanding how they work or how they don't work or what's bad about them, you're more likely to be able to build a strong foundation for how you understand the more sophisticated stuff when you get there. And so that also means looking at things that are out in the market and also realizing that just because a product is out there and exists and functions and has presumably passed whatever testing is required of it, does not necessarily mean it's well designed, or maybe it was well designed at the time, but standards and thinking have changed about the best way to do certain things. So just take everything with a grain of salt and not assume that everything that you see out in the world is perfect. I've, you know, certainly worked on imperfect things, and I would guarantee that every engineer ever has done something in the past and like, I wish I had done that differently. And if I did it today, I probably would have. And so if you realize that that happens to you, then it follows that that happens to other people, and everyone designs something. So there are things out there that just because you see it in the world doesn't mean it's necessarily the best thing that you should apply to your own designs.
Well,
to recognize that.
I completely agree with you. And to give a concrete legs to that is, so Eric Bogatin is going to be a keynote at Altium Live here in San Diego, and I did a podcast with him recently, and his talk, it sort of surprised me. Eric Bogatin's like the dean of signal integrity, whatever, whatever, but he ends up wanting to talk about Arduino, and I'm like, what? And what he's going to talk about is, I think it's Arduino Uno, whatever, there's, they estimate that there's, I don't know, a million or more of these boards out there, and the reference designs that people are downloading off, you know, open source. He took a look at these because he's a professor at Colorado University in Boulder.
Not good.
And he's like, the way they ground them. And so he uses it as a learning tool to get his students to learn not to create bad design habits for themselves, you know. So if you do a reference design and then you go into the next level, that you don't carry those bad habits with you. And I helped him name his topic. It's called Breaking Bad.
So that's good.
It's, you know, breaking those bad habits. But it's prolific. You know, those bad habits have been, and Arduino's awesome. And when you just need to do some little down and dirty thing, it doesn't matter. But if you carry those,
you're running a microcontroller at 8 megahertz, you can do pretty much whatever the hell you want.
Exactly. But if you carry those design habits and you just throw copper poor in random places as you go into more complex system, it's going to bite you, right? And so I thought that it's a fascinating topic. I'm really excited to hear it, but I'm more excited that we're going to record it and put it out there in the world. Like, watch out, right, for these things. Yeah. And it was really cool because he taught his students, so he had them, you know, measure it before, right, and then they redesigned it with the good habits, and they all their minds were blown. They're like, wait, this isn't right, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's. there's that much reduced noise because you designed it right or whatever. So anyways, it's funny. And so speaking of Arduino, you mentioned earlier that you've written a book and it's called Exploring Arduino, right?
Yes.
And are you, the book that you just finished writing, is it an updated version of that or a whole new book?
It's a second edition, so it's updated and expanded from the first edition. So the first edition came out in 2013, and this edition should be out before the end of the year. I think you can pre-order it now on Amazon, but it should be coming out within the next couple of months.
Okay.
It's considerably expanded from the first edition. Obviously, you know, errata corrected and things like that, but this one is now in full color, which is really nice because the first one, if you got the ebook, it was in color, but many people bought the print edition, which was in black and white, and it's kind of difficult when I say, connect the red wire here and the green wire here.
Yeah.
Like, which one's the red wire, which is the green wire?
You cannot do technical books in black and white. I've learned this. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one small part of it, but I've expanded considerably. And since I wrote the first edition, when I wrote the first edition of the book, I was doing my master's. I had limited experience in the real world designing, you know, mass production products. I have 6 or 7 years of experience doing it since that first edition came out. So I've pulled in a lot of that knowledge, and there's a lot more kind of sidebars and features and all this stuff about the real product creation side of these things. So when I talk about, there's a new section there talking about accelerometers and microelectromechanical machines. I don't just say like connect the accelerometer and the signal will go up and down as you shake it up and down. There's like a 2 or 3 page explanation of that. Here's what a MEMS device is. Here's how it's made. Here's how it works. Here's why they're so cheap now. Here's what the supply chain looks like for them in the cell phone industry and why you can get them cheaply, things like that. There's a new section added about stepper motors and explaining exactly how they're driven and the electromagnetic concepts behind that. There's a bunch more stuff about wireless connectivity, Bluetooth connectivity, Wi-Fi connectivity, RF connectivity. There's a whole explainer about what the hell the electromagnetic spectrum is as it relates to electronic product design, which is something that you learn about in university, but there's a surprising disconnect between, okay, I've taken my E&M course and I'm programming an Arduino to blink an LED. Like, how are those two things related? And as you know, they're very heavily related, right? If you ask anyone who's speaking at Altium Live or anyone who's like at PCB West, they'll repeat over and over again, the energy is not in the copper, the energy is in the planes between the copper. It's all about the electromagnetic waves. And so I talk about that, and it's kind of just a deeper dive into all these topics, and mm-hmm. not just, okay, how do you make an Arduino blink, but understanding what's actually happening there and giving people an introduction to microelectronics and embedded systems, software design, and product design that's a little bit more holistic than just blink an Arduino. It's like, how do you actually impart someone with knowledge that they can use and expand to other platforms and other microcontrollers and more sophisticated custom systems and things like that?
It's, you know, I find it really interesting. In my role here as the person that pulls in all the speakers for Altium Live, I think it's really fascinating this year that out of our, whatever, 8 keynotes, you know, 4 in San Diego, 4 in Frankfurt, 3 of you have something to do or say about Arduino. I mean, you're obviously the author, but Bob Martin from Microchip is also speaking. And, you know, professional engineers obviously are prototyping with Arduinos these days. So the lines are blurring between the maker and the pro maker and the pro. Like, the lines are blurring a little bit because they have gotten good at, you know, it's good enough to do some pretty cool things. And it's interesting to see how the implications of all this bleeds into each other, right?
It is. And I know Bob talked about this on his podcast they did with you last week about Arduino really being more about the software, the ease of software development, and it's really true. And Like in a lot of our factory systems that we use at Shaper, I use Arduino to program automation for factory tests and things like that. It's like, why not? It's like 100 times faster than any other thing.
Right.
And it's just, it makes that stuff easy and it makes it more accessible to people who might not be embedded firmware engineers, you know, by profession, but are tangentially touching those things. And it's nice to be able to know how those things work.
And Eric said, you know, he's got these master engineering students, and he says, basically, if I use Arduino, you know, in one class, I can have them writing simple code. You know, it's not like a whole semester, right?
Right. You don't have to spend a week trying to get your build system set up and debugging GCC and getting all the things to link correctly. And no, you just write the code and load it on over USB.
It's
stupidly easy.
Again, a great enabler, but it's just funny to see how these worlds are colliding. So as before I let you go, I didn't ask you in the beginning, but just tell the listeners a little bit about how many boards and you have crammed inside the Shaper Origin, because I don't know how you did it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good product to talk about. You know, I mentioned earlier about not everything is a rectangular board inside of a metal box, a grounded, perfect metal box with, you know, maybe one wire coming out of the side. But there's 10 PCBs in there and several flexes too, and cables and cameras and a screen and all that and power supply and all that other stuff. And it's a unique form factor that requires that sort of design. There's handle buttons that need to have boards there, and there's a screen that needs to have a board at that angle, and there's a camera that needs to have a board at another angle, and there's a main logic board, and all those things need to be heat sunk. They need to be reasonably dust proof. They need to be able to work in a wood shop environment, which is a absolutely horrible environment to have
electronics in.
High speed microelectronics in. You know, we literally connect to a vacuum tube, which is the worst generator of static electricity you can imagine. it's a very challenging environment. And like I mentioned, there's trade-offs that you have to make. You can't get everything to be optimized in the theoretically best way possible. You have to make trade-offs to make the important things work. So like, if you need this thing to be able to operate in a high static environment, like that involves making trade-offs with other parts of the system. And doing that in a reasonable way, making it assemblable was also challenging. I mean, this is a robot and it needs to be assembled and calibrated in the factory and assembled in a particular order. And we need to evaluate at each step of that assembly process and make sure that the final thing that rolls off the line meets our accuracy and precision standards for the tool. And doing that means you need to feed that information way back earlier in the design process to understanding how these boards are going to connect together, which thing connects in what order, and then simple things, and I'll talk about this in my talk too, like you just need to prevent obvious mistakes, right? Like you have two connectors that are connecting right next to each other. Those two connectors are identically the same. How do you make sure an operator isn't plugged them into the wrong thing? Mm-hmm. And just seemingly simple things like that there, as the designer, when you're designing a board, it's obvious to you because you understand the schematic and the system architecture of the whole thing. Someone who doesn't, whose job is to plug a wire into a port, doesn't understand that. And ideally, they shouldn't have to. So it's about making it idiot-proof. Not to say that the people send them
not to disparage your clients.
Not,
yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Not our clients, but even in the factories. But it's just making it so that everyone makes mistakes. I make idiotic mistakes all the time, and
we all do. We're human.
Designing a system where you can't make those mistakes, even if you want to, it just, you know, you're going to prevent problems before they even happen.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, and I'll make sure to share your video that we went up to your shop and filmed inside, and we'll show all the versions of the predecessors of the Origin, where all those electronics lived outside of the machine, and now they're all inside of the machine. And I'll give our users a peek at that video. It's a great video, and I will also make sure I'll hunt down if you can pre-order, I'll look up that link as well and put that in, and your web links. And Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us. Before we sign off, why don't you tell our audience what you personally find valuable at Altium Live and sort of how that's impacted you? I'm asking for a shameless plug. I don't mean it to be that way. What I mean is, if people are on the fence about going, go, not go, like, what's the value in going?
I mean, if you go, you can buy me a drink. We can hang out. Sounds good to me.
Right on.
It is about the people, though. Certainly when I went last year, I met Carl for the first time last year, and Carl's great, and he'll be speaking at Frankfurt. And I met Rick and Eric and a lot of other people, and just having the opportunity to talk with those people who are all, like, objectively way smarter and way more experienced than I am. And I have a lot to learn from those people. And for me, it's an opportunity to learn from them and to, I really, like, hate the, when people are like, oh, it's about networking. Like, no one likes to network. No one wants to network. No one wants to think that they are being networked at, right? Like, I want to actually meet people who I'm going to have some form of relationship with, right, professional relationship with, and be able to learn from them as peers. I don't want to just exchange business cards with people. Yeah. And that's my experience last year, really meeting people who wanted to engage and talk and are just enthusiastic about what they do. And I mean, I assume it comes off as clear from speaking to me that I'm very enthusiastic about what I do, and everyone else who I met there was as well. And it's nice and refreshing to meet people who are enthusiastic about some of the same topics you are.
Yeah.
And for me in particular, as the only electrical engineer at Shaper, not for long, thankfully, we have another one joining soon. Sometimes I'll learn something exciting and world, or something that's exciting to me about PCB design or electrical engineering or some new study that was done or experiment or whatever. And I'll tell it to people here, and they're like, cool, that's cool, Jeremy, glad you learned that.
Yeah, it's kind of like when I ask my friends who
like-minded people.
Yeah, it is. It really is about like-minded people. And I love the videos that Ben makes where it's like people sitting out by the fire pit with their laptops opening, you know, talking to each other because y'all speak the same language, right? And that's the goal, is just to sort of build this community, right, of like-minded people that can learn from each other, because as much as we are connected, we are very disconnected. So, you know, that's sort of what our goal is. So thanks so much for sharing that, Jeremy. Well, thanks again. I'll let you go. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. We'll look forward to seeing you in Frankfurt, and I'll make sure to share all those links below. So thanks again, Jeremy, for joining.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
For our listeners, we're delighted you could listen in on this conversation with myself and Jeremy Blum. We'll see you next time. Until then, remember to always stay on track.